A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hello and welcome to the Newsroom podcast. I'm joined by David Maddock of The Mirror, at Maddock Mirror, once again. It's been a few weeks now, David. Thanks for joining us again.
Yeah, no, pleasure to be here.
I am really excited for this one, mainly because I've been off ill all week. Thank you for the kind words, everybody, as well, on all the videos and stuff, and the few of you with the non-kind words, thank you as well, because it means I'm relevant. So, I haven't talked about the Napoli win at all yet, so I'm really excited to delve into this with somebody, and that's where we're going to start. I mean, first of all, David, what an incredible week it's been for Liverpool so far.
Well, I was going to say thanks for inviting me this week, because at least there's something to talk about. I mean, it's been an amazing week. Top of the Premier League, which was unexpected, to be honest. And then going into a huge game, probably the biggest game of the season so far because of, you know, what was at stake. And Liverpool performed brilliantly in it. So it has been. It's been a hell of a week. It's actually... Virgil van Dijk said after the game, after the Napoli game, he was asked whether what he felt about fans saying it was a blessing in disguise if they went out, and he basically said that's rubbish. We've got to be in all the competitions, and he said let's just enjoy the ride, basically, and that's exactly what it is at the moment. It's a hell of a ride with Liverpool, and I think you've got to enjoy it.
I think you do, you know. Listen, a lot's been said and a lot's been written about last season's Champions League journey to the final and stuff, but if you can't enjoy the journey, for me personally as a fan, I don't get it. I mean, you know, I think back to 13-14 and there's still fans of other clubs out there who'll be going, you know, you shouldn't have been singing, you're going to win the league. When do you get a chance to sing that?
Yeah, exactly.
We're going to win the league. It's only before you win the league that you can actually sing that. And for me, that's all part of the journey. It's not just silverware's not the be-all and end-all of it. You've got to enjoy these journeys, you know, stories from going away to Porto last season and battering them 5-0 and beating Manchester City at the Etihad when they were top of the Premier League table and running away with it, and everything that we've gone through, losing in Roma but still going through, that's all part of an incredible journey that we've been on as fans and journalists.
Absolutely. Funnily enough, last season, maybe the two greatest stories were two defeats, which was the semi-final in Rome, as you say, where at the end it was probably the best atmosphere, the best moment I've seen for Liverpool fans in a long, long time. And then the final itself, and the stories people have from Kiev, you know, they lost. It was, you know, hugely disappointing because they dominated the first half an hour. But the actual experience, I don't think many people came back from there feeling devastated because the experience they had, you look at football now, and it is dominated by money, obviously. Mm. And it's dominated by rich clubs who are financed by super billionaires or even states, you know. So the chances are, and the statistics tell you, that the super rich clubs always win, because the more money you spend on wages, the more chance you have of winning. So you can't win all the time. And a club like Liverpool, who, you know, I mean, they spend a lot of money on wages. They spend far more than, you know, most of the rest of the Premier League, but they're only fourth highest spenders. So the chances of them actually winning are relatively low. So if you're getting close, if you're top of the league at Christmas, if you get to the Champions League final, enjoy it. Just like love it, you know, because you, as you say, it doesn't happen very often. So just enjoy the ride.
You know, in 2005, I was working as a manager of a pub at the time. Now, anyone who's worked in the catering industry will tell you, you don't get to go to footy games very often.
Yeah.
So, you know, going to somewhere like Istanbul was completely out of the question for me. Over the last 8 years since we've been doing Red Men, I have been, unfortunately, all losses. I have been to the Capital One Cup final. I have been to an FA Cup final. I have been to a Europa League final. And I've been to a Champions League final. Now, there'll be people out there going, you're in really bad luck. Yeah. You need to stop going Don't to go. Finals, Chris. And me, and do you know what? I'm very close to being able to do that. And I'd said that after the Europa League final, I couldn't take another heartbreaking loss. But it's the hope that keeps you going. And as a football fan, to be in a stadium when Liverpool lift that trophy and, you know, to one day do it is what keeps driving me to go and support the team. And, you know, I think people seem to have this entitlement around football. I've said it so many times over the years that I've heard fans of other clubs say, I spend this on my ticket, therefore that. Bullshit. You spend your money to go and support your club, and the chances are they'll win or they'll lose, and that's that. You don't spend your money, £50 a game or whatever, to see your team win. You don't. You spend your money to go and see them play, and the result is the result. But what I was trying to come back to is that Europa League final, it was a heartbreaking loss, but I knew something special was happening.
Yeah.
Just like the run to the Champions League final gave me even more hope that we're closer to something. And I said at the start of the season, Dave, I thought Klopp's Liverpool side is much better set up for European football than Premier League football. What? I was wrong. Because he's changed that style of play. And right now, it looks like we're able to dominate in the Premier League against the dross, quite frankly, yeah, and pick up results against them. But also, importantly, switch it up in games like this where you actually saw Klopp's European side come back for the first time against Napoli.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Do you know what? What Liverpool have is world-class players, basically. And I saw something from a United fan posted online. And he was talking about Manchester United, and he was saying that Manchester United only have one world-class player at the moment. And he's probably right. And he said the problem they've got is that City have got three, maybe even four. Liverpool have got three world-class players, maybe even four. Chelsea have got a couple of world-class players. Spurs have got a couple of world-class players. United are basically have one, and that's their keeper. And that's right. But the point being that Liverpool, who spend less money than Chelsea and less money than Manchester United, have probably equal number of world-class players that Manchester City do. So what you're getting now is a Liverpool team that have got all of Klopp's attributes, which is the team ethic, that work rate, that incredible ability, and you saw that against Napoli. But they've also got some world-class players. So you've got world-class keeper, clearly, world-class centre-half, nobody disputes that. And a world-class
left-back.
Yeah, well, absolutely, for me. But they've got, you know, Mo Salah. I hesitated there because I was trying to describe his position. So a world-class what? But yeah, really, he's a world-class centre-forward, isn't he? And you know, his goal-scoring is beyond doubt, and he's proven that. And when you've got, for me, you're right, Andy Robbo was probably the man of the match on Tuesday. So you've got at least three, maybe four players who would get into any other team, really. And they are providing that little bit extra beyond, say, the Europa League final team, which was an exciting side, but it got there because of Klopp's system and Klopp's mentality. Whereas now, you've still got that, as we saw, and that's the point you just made. We've still got that, and they can step up. They said before the game they wanted passion. They really needed to have that sort of driving commitment that his teams have. But they've also, in the key moments, they've got world-class players. Salah showed it with a world-class finish, and it was. And I still can't believe people are not saying more about that goal because it was unbelievable. And then you saw Van Dijk and Alisson and Andy Robertson produce incredible defensive performances at the right time when they really needed it. So I agree with you exactly, and that's where they're at with that extra dimension.
And that's it. And we've looked at title-winning sides over the years, and you'll have reported on a lot of them. And a lot of these sides do have an incredibly strong spine, don't they? You think back to the Manchester United one with Van der Sar in goal and Stam and maybe your Vidic's or your Ferdinand's and Roy Keane's ahead of them and then a striker in Van der Sar. They've all had that throughout the time. Liverpool haven't really had that spine for so long, and We've always had the problem with the goalkeeper, I think.
Yeah.
But Alisson's come in, and it's just like, why didn't we do this years ago? Why didn't we just go and buy a goalkeeper that can do this years ago?
Honestly, the answer to that is I've no idea. Funny enough, you look at Klopp himself, and he never really emphasised keeper. When he was at Dortmund, he had a Weidenfeller who was there before him.
Yeah, it was
there before him, and he was solid enough. But he brought in a lot of unbelievably top class players there. But keeper was an area where he never really bothered. And I think he actually needed a little bit of persuading that they needed to spend big money on a keeper. I don't think even in the summer he felt it was an area that it required the huge money that centre half did or you know centre forward did. But that game at Chester, that pre-season at Chester, I think that persuaded him.
That might have been. Yeah. And the warm-ups at Tranmere, if I remember correctly.
Yeah,
as well.
That's right.
But a question for you then. Do you think Klopp has evolved with his proximity to Guardiola? And I'll try and phrase that a bit better. Klopp's sides were always built on the counter-press, the gegenpress. Now, it feels to me like it's very much morphed into something, maybe a middle ground between a possession-based side and also a counter-attacking side. Now, for Pep's style of play, I think the goalkeeper's always been needed because you need to be able to recycle that possession the way that Ederson does for Manchester City. But because Liverpool are afforded the possession so often in games because teams don't want them to Liverpool to counter-attack them, do you think he's been influenced by Pep in that way and maybe that's one of the reasons that he's gone for this style of football?
I personally not, because even going back a couple of years ago, the reason he wanted Karius in the side, even though Karius clearly had some flaws, was because of his footballing ability. The fact that, I mean, and you know what? I mean, you can rewrite history and all that, but he was good at his distribution. Yeah. I mean, that's why he was in the team. Obviously, you need to make saves, but he was in the team for that reason. And so Klopp always wanted that kind of quick exchange between defence and attack, obviously, and the keeper provides that. In the search for a goalkeeper, it was a real problem. There were so few candidates because there were decent keepers out there that they rated, but they weren't footballers. So, I mean, they could have gone out and got Joe Hart, for instance, but for the same reason that Manchester City didn't want him, Liverpool didn't want him, and the same at the fella at Southampton. They really rated him as a goalkeeper, but he's not a footballer. And even the Atletico Madrid keeper, who's probably
Oblak,
who's probably the best shot stopper in the world, footballing wise, he's not great on the sort of the movement of the ball. So there were doubts about that as well. I think they could have, you know, gone in for him, but in the end, the money and the doubts stopped them. So Klopp's always had that in his side. He's always wanted a keeper who can do that. He's got one now. There's absolutely no doubt. Against Napoli, there was one moment where Alisson knocked a flat kick 60, 70 yards left to right. Brilliant pass, and you think, Jesus Christ, you know, the centre-half would be proud of
it's
that.
It's like Jan Molby playing in net sometimes,
absolutely,
isn't it?
Yeah, he absolutely has that ability. I think Klopp's tactical changes are more to do with he's pragmatic, and he realises that at this level now, Liverpool are at, they're just simply not going to be able to play that sort of gegenpress, if you like, that counter-attacking football at all times. They can still do it against teams when teams come and actually play. Napoli came and pushed quite high on Liverpool.
That was an interesting thing. It looked like Klopp expected that to me. And I understand why Ancelotti would set his team up that way. If they score a goal, we needed three.
Yeah,
minimum,
absolutely.
Didn't we? And so it made sense, but it also kind of played into our hands a little bit in that case, didn't it? I think first 10, 15 minutes, I thought both teams vying for possession quite well. Then Liverpool really started to get a sort of territorial advantage and an advantage of ball possession as well. But Napoli didn't play. They didn't play the way that we'd seen them play earlier this season, did they?
No, that's right. And you know what? I mean, I don't want to get too technical or anything, but I think Ancelotti looked at Liverpool's midfield, and obviously he'd have done all his homework a long time before, and thought that he could press the Liverpool midfield because, you know, the, possibly with the exception of Wijnaldum, the midfield that played the other night, the one weakness they have is that if you pressure them on the ball, they're not good at escaping the press. They're not good at sort of moving the ball around the body and still passing forward, turning and passing forward. They tend to have to go back. And so he'd have done that homework. But actually, maybe the sort of first 15 minutes with Henderson apart, Henderson, Milner and Wijnaldum did actually beat that press really well. And they were helped by Mane particularly sort of coming and giving options. And obviously the centre-halves, Joel Matip came out and played as well, which helped a huge amount. And so it kind of beat Napoli's tactic and gave Liverpool momentum, because then as Napoli pushed so high, obviously, Liverpool then just needed two passes and they were in, and they did it all game. So people criticised Henderson and Milner particularly before the game, but in fact credit to them because they did their job far better than I think people gave them credit for.
It's an interesting point actually, and it's something that I think, you know, if you look at impact and packing stats around football, they're very difficult to get at a base level for a lot of fans and stuff nowadays. But they are out there, and Milner comes off as one of the best midfielders in the Premier League with his packing and impact stats. Jordan Henderson's much better than you'd give him credit for, because people think he plays the ball backwards, but he takes out a lot of players with his passes. Of the three players, Wijnaldum's actually the worst on impact and packing stats. And, you know, but when you've got the likes of Andy Robertson and Trent Alexander-Arnold, who are constantly playing vertical passes,
you can
get around that midfield. And I think that's something that Liverpool have done very well. Andy Robertson, not only does he sometimes beat a man before he plays a pass, he does that so often, but he can take 2, 3, 4 players out of the game with a pass straight afterwards. And I'm not sure they were quite set up for Liverpool to work down the wings as well as we did.
Yeah, although if they weren't, God knows why, because you saw against PSG, you know, that at home, Liverpool, I was going to call them fullbacks, they're not fullbacks, no. They're wide players, and both of them were absolutely magnificent. Both of them were. Robertson was unbelievable, but Alexander-Arnold, I saw that stat that he created 6 chances or something. You know, I mean, it's amazing, really, and he was outstanding, and still such a young player. It's incredible. With Liverpool, you're right. They quite often they don't need the midfielders to play the role that traditionally, you know, in other sides, say City, that their midfielders do, because they have more of an emphasis on both the fullbacks or wide players, and then the front three, sort of creating the moments, creating the space, and turning the opposition, which they did. You know, I think it was almost perfect on Tuesday.
Yeah, I mean, Trent Alexander-Arnold played, off the top of my head, I think it was 13 passes into Salah's feet. You know, that's your right back playing it to your right forwards.
Yeah.
Now, that was much higher than Andy Robertson to Sadio Mane. But then I've always thought that Trent plays better with Salah ahead of him.
Yeah.
Because I think when it gets into trouble time, he's always got that whipped ball over the top for Salah.
I would say that one of the reasons that the stat with Robertson and Mane is Mane was actually coming more into the sort of middle, maybe to help with the sort of to beat the press, really, by offering an option and trying to create almost a space, you know, as Firmino also does, but he was trying to create a half space between the sort of the midfield press of Napoli and their defence, and it worked, you know. Although, he then also like used that space to get chances and then missed them, but I think he actually performed a brilliant role. Although you can't. There's no doubt he should have scored. He should have probably scored 3. But I thought he performed, again, better than people gave him credit for, apart from, obviously, in front of goal. And, you know, sometimes that happens, doesn't it?
And what about, we've skated around it, but, you know, the defence, Virgil van Dijk, Andy Robertson, Trent Alexander-Arnold, Joel Matip, Alisson, the fact that Liverpool can now win games 1-0, how important is that moving forward through the season?
Well, obviously it's massive because they've won loads 1-0 already this season, and you've got to say, no, absolutely no doubt, last season they wouldn't have won many of those. Do you know what? I should know this. I should know how many games they won 1-0, but they've won several, And those games in the Premier League, they wouldn't have won last season. They'd have conceded a goal at the end, whatever. And take you know, 6 points away, say, 4 points away, and
City, you're back in the pack.
Yeah, you're back in the pack, exactly, and you're just chasing City, and that's it. So it's vital. It's absolutely vital. And it comes back to what I said right at the start, is when you add two world-class players to a very good team, and Liverpool, since Klopp arrived, have been a very good team. In his first half season, they got to two finals. Mm. You're a good side if that happens. Add two world-class players, and you're becoming a top-class side. And that's where they're at now, definitely.
Well, what do you think? Is it as simple as you could have thrown any world-class centre-half in and we'd have been a much better side? Or is there something about the fellas the Klopp picks that, you know, he's very much a humanist, isn't he, at heart, Jürgen Klopp? I think, you know, he wants to do the right by people, but he also, I think he has a lot of time and thought go into the types of people that enter the group as a whole. I mean, would Koulibaly, for example, work just as well as Virgil van Dijk? Because he's a class centre-half
That's it. I mean, it's a great question. And I'd answer it in two ways. First of all, it's not as simple as that, because there's hardly any top world-class centre-halves out there. And actually, I'm glad you brought Koulibaly up. First of all, because I don't know how to pronounce his names, and I still couldn't do it. Second, because Klopp spoke about him to us several times. You know, it's kind of off the record, so you're not really allowed to sort of print it. Certainly not say that he said it, but
you're going to anyway.
Well, this is now some years later. It's some years later, so it's fine. And he basically was saying, everybody's going on. We need a centre half. But who is out there? Who is out there that I can go and get? And he said, Koulibaly. Like, is he better? Whatever his name is, forget it. Is he better than Dejan Lovren? And he's like, no, he isn't better. And then he mentioned a couple of others. Interestingly, never mentioned Van Dijk. But he basically said, there's nobody out there that is currently better than the ones I've got. And it's just making it work. Obviously, when a player who was better came up, he went and got him. And here's the interesting thing. I watched that game, and everybody around me were going, and I'm not going to say his name, the Napoli centre-half, he's top class. And I was going, is he top class? Is he? Because for me, he can't play.
Really?
I mean, I just don't think on the ball he's good enough. And you need to be at this level if you're going to be... I mean, he's a great defender, absolutely. He's an immense defender. But you need to be able to play. And there were times I saw him on the ball when you're looking at him, you're going, he looks a bit like Sacco. He's like five
looks
touches.
Ungainly.
He's so ungainly. And actually, when he got done for the goal, he looked ungainly then. And then you're thinking, for me, it's difficult to criticise him because obviously he's an immense defender, but I don't think he's balanced enough to be a world-class defender because he can't take the ball, for instance, under pressure and stuff like that, whereas Van Dijk can. And actually, Joel Matip, he showed that he can. And I'm not suggesting that, you know, he's a world-class defender, but what I'm saying is he can play and he looks great alongside Van Dijk, but so does Lovren and so does Gomez. And that's not a coincidence, is it? Because he brings in a world-class defender and suddenly the other three defenders who've all been criticised in the past are all, like, everyone criticised Joel Matip and yet look at him the last three games before he got injured. It's like, yeah. Suddenly he looks like a top-class player. And I'll just say this. I was speaking to a mate of mine who's a massive Celtic fan, and he said, it was the same at Celtic, he said every defender he played alongside, when he played alongside them, they looked a better player. They really did. They looked comfortable at that level. As soon as he didn't play, they looked like the crap that they had, you know, they were before. And he said, you know, Van Dijk does that because Van Dijk has presence, basically.
There's a calmness there, isn't there? He almost looks like personally affronted when he has to sprint as well. Like his position wasn't good enough for himself. And he looks to me like he's angry at himself when he has to sprint or something.
Yeah.
But he showed me in that game, and I watched this game on the telly because I mentioned I was ill, so I got a different view to normal. I'm normally, obviously, every home game, and most of the aways, or at least it used to be a large part of the aways, I'd not seen him screaming at like the fullbacks as often as I saw in that Napoli game, and I wondered whether that was just him again just become more and more comfortable in his own skin in this Liverpool side, or whether it's just not something that I've noticed from the stands very often.
Well, do you know what? I mean, people forget this. He's not old. He's like, you know, he's still quite young for a centre-half. And second, he's never played at the top level before, you know. He played in Holland. He went to Celtic, and Celtic, you know, I mean, they won everything, but it's not a great level. It's championship level. And then he went to Southampton, and they were a good side. And they did well, but they're mid-table Premier League. So he's never played at the top level, and then he's coming to Liverpool, and it, you know, for the first time, he's playing at the top level. He's playing in Champions League finals, and you know, as a young player, I think we forget. We're looking at him like he's 32, and he's played, you know, for a massive club his whole career. He's not. So in a way, he was settling in. He was getting used to it himself, and he made mistakes. He did, and he still makes the odd mistake. But he's only going to get better. That's the amazing thing about him. And I think sometimes we all get a bit carried away. You know, I'm guilty of it as well. I've talked about him as being world class, and he is. But he's still learning because he's still young, and he's still literally only been not even been a season at the very top level. Mm. He's not had one full season yet because he didn't come till January. So, you know, in 18 months' time, I think he'll be even more commanding. He'll be captain of Liverpool for a start, and he'll be telling people what to do, and he'll be dominating games and controlling the whole thing. You saw he had that exchange with Henderson as well, and you know, yeah, it was good to see. It's good that, you know, like Henderson was telling him where he'd made a mistake, and they were having a bit of a
You need that, I think, in winning sides, don't you?
Absolutely, you do. He said afterwards that himself, Van Dijk. He said, it's all good. It's like, it shows that the team care, and it shows that they're all in it together because they're telling each other. And he said, and if there's a problem with it, he can sort out in the dressing room afterwards. But he said there was no problem, you know. Occasionally it might overstep the mark, but he said it was exactly what a winning side, a good side, do and need. Definitely.
What about another thing that I think we saw and we touched on briefly, but the gegenpress being back in this game, you know?
Yeah.
How is that? Is it? It's a difficult one to phrase this. I've been wanting to see this all season long, and I'd expected to see it in the Champions League more so than the league because of the calibre of opposition, the away games being that much harder. I think, you know, us losing three away games has proved that. Does this bode well for Liverpool in the next stage of the competition, as well as the Premier League?
It does, because I'm sure we're going to talk about this later, but if you look at the size they can get, you look at the team, all the away games, Paris was a bit of a blip, but Napoli and Belgrade, they basically bypassed midfield. And, you know, Napoli play with three centre-halves and bypassed midfield, really. Which made it harder for Liverpool to press. They wanted to press, and it was difficult, and it never worked in both of those games. And in Paris's ability on the ball stopped them from pressing quite as much as, certainly in the first half. In the second half, it worked, actually, and it worked really well, and Liverpool dominated the second half in Paris. So they got done a little bit because sides obviously know what's coming. But now, with the exception of Porto, all the teams they can get, none of those sides are going to come out and do that, really. I think it will be back and it will be more effective. And I think you'll see the team of last season in the knockout stages. But of course, they're playing really good teams now. So,
well, let's talk about the Champions League draw. It's on Monday next week. So we can face Dortmund, Barcelona, Porto, Bayern Munich, Real Madrid or Juventus. Quite a who's who of European football, really, isn't it?
Yeah, it's funny, isn't it? Because normally in the Champions League, you kind of get a split between first and second in the, you know, who have of the really big clubs. They don't all win the group. It's quite a strange phenomenon. But this time, basically, possibly with the exception of Atletico Madrid, all the teams that you would expect to win the group have kind of won it, you know. I mean, actually, I've got to say, I expected Liverpool to win their group. And had they performed remotely away from home as they should have done, they would have won it quite easily. But with all the rest of the sides, the teams you would expect to win have won. So you're up against something in really tough. And Liverpool are going to have to produce the form of last season in the Champions League to get through this next round.
Who would you take?
That's easy.
Well, not everybody. I've heard loads of people say Real Madrid.
No, you've got you look at Porto, and they are the one side who are wouldn't be favourites wouldn't be joint favourites. That Liverpool have got a great record against them, obviously, and they'll be fearful of Liverpool. There's no doubt. So, although it could play the other way, and that Liverpool could go there, and they could like say, do you know what, we're not even going to attack. We're just going to play long balls and not worry about and just make sure we don't concede, you know. So, but yeah, you'd take them. Of course, you'd take them.
Who would be the top of the list for who you'd want to avoid from those six teams?
Barcelona, I think, at this stage, definitely. I mean, you can't avoid the sides, so you've got to beat them and all that. But you definitely want to avoid Barcelona. I would take Real Madrid. I would. I don't think Real Madrid are any good. I think they're poor this season. And also, I think that more importantly, if you get at them, their crowd will turn very quickly because they know that things are wrong there. And in Madrid, they have this thing where it turns against the side, as it has done this season, and they got beat again at home against by a rubbish team this week in the Champions League. Their crowd will really go quickly. So, I mean, you know, Liverpool would fancy that.
And it's going to be a big miss anyway, though, isn't he? Virgil van Dijk's going to be missing the first
leg.
Yeah,
that's right. Yeah,
and that just makes me go, well, Porto then. Please.
That's another reason why you'd want Porto. Yeah, definitely, yeah. Absolutely.
And what about Juventus?
I don't think Italian football's all that. I actually don't think Napoli were all that. I don't think Roma were all that. Both played pretty well against Liverpool. Juventus were battered last season by Spurs in the knockout stages for all but about 7 minutes, and yet went through. And you know they've got that ability, a bit like Real Madrid in the final. They have the ability to somehow win even when they're getting beat. You know, if you see what I mean. But I would fancy Juventus. I think Liverpool have a decent record against Juventus.
Yeah, I think the last time it was the 2005 run was probably the last time we played them, wasn't it? When Sammy Hippie scored that left-footed volley against them at Anfield. I think it was 2-1 at the time. Okay, well, we'll move on then. We've got a huge game at the weekend against Manchester United.
Yeah, it's funny, isn't it? We're not even mentioning United.
And we're half an hour in and it's looming
it's just
large.
What a week it's been, yeah. What a time it is.
We're so far ahead of them. What is going wrong at United this season, David?
Right, let me first of all say, like, this is the worst time to play Manchester United. It really is, because they're a mess. And that means one thing, and that's Mourinho is just making sure he doesn't get beat in this game and dirty stealing a win. That's what he'll want to do. So everything I say about what is wrong about United, I'm going to qualify by saying I fear them. If I'm being a Liverpool fan, I would fear them this weekend.
Because the wounded animal.
Well,
thing.
No, just because of Mourinho and the ugly stuff that he's going to do. And Liverpool, touch wood, they're going to be a different side because of everything we've spoken about, how they can win 1-0, how they can defend and they can be calm now and they don't have to go 100.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs.
Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number smart beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number limited edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
One size fits all seemed like a good idea for clothes.
Nice dress.
It's a t-shirt.
Until you tried it on. Same goes for your healthcare. That's why United Healthcare offers a variety of flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. So whether you're between jobs, coming off a parent's plan, or even missed open enrollment, you can find the plan that fits you best. Find out more about United Healthcare coverage at uh1.com. That's uh1.com.
100 miles an hour, which means it could be a really boring game. But still, Mourinho, I don't like him. I think that's pretty obvious if you look at my Twitter. I just don't like him. I don't like the way he plays. I don't like the way he speaks about his players. I just everything about him for me is wrong these days.
Has it always been the case then?
Well, I've never liked the way he played football. He's always played horrible football. He always has. And anybody who says any different, they're just not watching his sides. But now, honestly, I reckon they'll have less than 30% possession, honestly, because he won't want the ball in midfield. Absolutely no way. So he'll play Fellaini, he'll play Lukaku, and they'll bypass Liverpool's press. They'll try and get the ball wide behind as Liverpool's fullbacks push on. They'll get big guys in those positions and they'll just play long ball. And it's not easy when good sides come and play like that because they're still good players.
Yeah.
And it counters what Liverpool want to do. And that's why, I'm concerned. I think it's a game Liverpool could drop points in. You know, they could certainly draw it. United, in fact, Klopp's in the league, he's not actually beaten Mourinho.
At the last date, United. Have we beaten United in the league? Well, three draws and five losses?
Yeah, they beat them in Europe, in the Europa League, and that's it under Klopp. And two wins for them and three draws, I think, under Klopp.
Wow.
So it's not, you know, the record ain't good. And the reason is simple, is that basically Mourinho comes to not get beat and then sometimes sneaks a win. And even last season when they won, they were 2-0 up and won 2-1. He played for a draw and they got two goals. And then from the time they scored, I think they had 27% possession, you know, from the time they scored the second goal.
Wow.
And it's ugly. It's frightening. But that's what he'll do. And they are still a mess. But actually, it focuses things when you're playing against Liverpool. If you're United, if you're Mourinho, and you know they know they can't lose. If they lose, that's it. They will. If they lose, they're out of the top. Any chance of finishing in the top four.
Does he lose his job if he loses at Liverpool at the weekend?
Well, I don't think so. But purely because it won't matter that. Because there's no way they'll be able to finish in the top four if they lose to Liverpool. So whoever you then bring in, they're not going to finish in the top four. And actually, the people available are just not going to be the candidate they would want going forward. So it doesn't make much sense as bringing in a caretaker. So I probably didn't explain that very well. But what I'm saying is they want a manager. They will now, and in the summer, I think they'll get it. And so they'll want a Pochettino or somebody like that. And they're not going to get that manager now, and it's pointless having a caretaker. So you know, because they're not going to do any better than where Mourinho's at now. Because how many points will they be behind Liverpool if they lose? It'll be like 18 or
something like that.
It might even be 20.
Are we 16 ahead of them now?
It is close to 20 points ahead if Liverpool win on Sunday, but they'll also be, I think, 10 points behind fourth place or even 12 points behind if the other clubs win. And you know, that gap is already there. And they're not making it up if they lose. I mean, to be honest, they're not making it up anyway. But if they lose on Sunday, that's it. They are just playing for a Europa League place. And so they can't afford to lose.
Yeah, so confirmation on that. They are 8 points behind fifth, which is level with fourth.
Yeah.
Which you'd guess Arsenal and Chelsea would both pick up victories, so they could be 11 points behind.
Well, exactly, yeah. 11 points behind fourth place.
And they are 16 points behind us after 16 games.
That's right,
games.
So it's 19 points. And you know, it is just unthinkable. But that's their season. You know, they're not going to win the Champions League. So the season's down then to the FA Cup, isn't it? So going right back to the original question, they're a mess. What is wrong with them? It's the manager for me. But that, you know, you can argue that there's a malaise at the top of the club. The club are actually spending money still. They've spent money. They didn't spend money this summer, but they spent a huge amount of money. And the reason they didn't really spend money this summer is they decided that they would, the money that the manager wanted them to spend was on players who were just as good as the players they already had. And players like, for instance, Martial, Rashford, Lingard even, are still young players who needed developing. And he was wanting to bring in players who would just basically would stop their progress. And you know, Martial they'd spent 50 million on, so it's not. I can understand that point. And I think United do need a different approach now. They need to start looking at what City do, what Liverpool do, and just don't. Liverpool and City don't buy 32-year-old players, 30-year-old players, and spend 50 million on them. They just don't do it. And you know, everyone says City are buying the title, and they are, but they're not buying them with 32-year-olds.
Was it 10 years ago that they buy Van Persie in for 30-odd million quid United?
And he
did propel them to
league. Yeah, he did.
But that's 10 years ago now.
But they did it with Sanchez, and it's been an absolute disaster. You know, they did it with Ibrahimovic, and it was stupid money for a player that, you know, it just was never going to take them forward.
What I don't understand is how he convinced everybody that his defenders weren't good enough when they were one of the best defences in the league last season.
Yeah.
But it feels to me like he knocks their confidence so often, the players that he's got playing for them.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know what Luke Shaw's... It wouldn't surprise me if Luke Shaw didn't know whether he was coming or
going. Well, do you know what? I won't name names, but I know managers who say privately, what the hell is he doing? How can you manage like that? How can you maintain a team? How can you create a team spirit? Of course, he doesn't really create, like, the teams. What he creates is tension, and he has a system. Mourinho, he creates tension within it, and then he does have you know, real ability in his forward lines. When you look, always he has match winners, he has people who work, people, you know, aggressive, defensive, incredibly tough defenses, work in midfield, and then absolute top quality up front. And he's won titles like that. Now he's got a problem because he's undermined all those players, and he needed to get them out and bring in more players. And of course, they didn't allow that, and they wanted him to manage. But his management doesn't really allow for building over a long period. That's why he tends to leave clubs.
All the team ends up almost imploding.
It does, yeah, it tends to, yeah. The first Chelsea team he built, which was his best team, and they were, you know, they were a brilliant, sometimes ruthless, sometimes tough to watch, but always a brilliant team. But they did fall apart in the end. You know, he did lose, and they did, you know, they played some dour football in the end as well. So I'm blaming the manager, but actually, and he's got to be blamed for some of the decisions. Sanchez, as I say, was a disastrous. And you look at it, and he was you could argue he was at his actual peak at Arsenal because he had played well that season despite being horrible in trying to force his way out. But he was only ever going to go down.
Yeah.
And he was probably going to go down relatively quickly because he is an old player. And his game is kind of based on pace. And you know, as soon as you lose even a fraction of that, then you lose his effectiveness. Admittedly, he's hardly been helped by Mourinho's system, which doesn't really bring the best out of him. And he asked him to play kind of out wider and it's not really suited him. But it all comes down to the fact that they've not really got the players to ultimately fit his system, mm-hmm. and he can't change his system to fit his players.
Oh, that's because it's Bobby Robson's system, come on. He found that notebook and hasn't added a page himself for 15 bloody years.
I'd say the other thing is as well, possibly what you say there exactly, he's not changed for 15 years, but football has. So, you know, the way Pochettino plays, the way Guardiola plays, the way Klopp plays, even the way Eddie Howe plays, you know, it's evolved. The football has evolved. It is a kind of different sort of approach now, where those sides can more often beat the sides who play like Mourinho's teams. So it's an interesting development in football, and maybe always happens eventually. Managers do go beyond their time, and then it's time for someone else, and maybe Mourinho's time's up.
Yeah, that's it. Let's hope so. Or let's not actually. Let's keep Man United where they are now with Mourinho for as long as possible.
I want to see sides who play football. You know, I mean, it's like sometimes you look at City and you're like, I wish they wouldn't be quite so dominant. You know, I wish they wouldn't spend quite so much money. But actually, you know, they do play amazing football, and you have to give them credit. It is amazing to watch. And even Spurs, they're a great team to watch at times. And, you know, everybody loves Barcelona for the way they play. So it is the kind of football you do want to see. I just want to see sides like Liverpool succeeding, who play that way without spending quite as much money as, say, Barcelona, say, Manchester City or Chelsea or Manchester United. Obviously, they still spend huge amounts of money. And so, like anybody watching who's a smaller club, it's true. But you want to see sides winning like Liverpool without quite spending the same as the rest.
Or just sides like Liverpool winning. I don't really care how they get there, to be honest. But yeah. I'll be honest, I would prefer it to be done this way, building something over time, because it feels like we've been along for the journey, and that goes back to what we were saying at the very top.
Well, it's the only way. I mean, and people might think I'm sort of, you know, talking out my arse here because Liverpool have spent, you know, a world record fee on a keeper and a world record fee on a centre-half. But actually, they still haven't spent on wages anywhere near what City and United are spending, or Barcelona or Real Madrid. And they don't. It isn't the same. It's not the same spending type.
Has Manchester City spent £11.5 million on a centre-half and their left-back first choices? Because that's what Joe Gomez and Andy Robertson cost us. So ultimately, we spend £75 million on Van Dijk, but we get Trent up through the ranks, nothing. £3.5 million on Joe Gomez, arguably your first choice centre half, and £8 million on Robertson.
Yeah.
We still spent less than £100 million on our back four. It just so happens that £75 million of that was on Virgil van Dijk.
Yeah, yeah, no, it's true. And even like with Salah, they could have gone out and bought somebody for twice that much at that time, who would have been far more recognised. And they had to, I mean, they had to scout well, and they had to, you know, take a little bit of a gamble that he would come back to English football and succeed this time. And it did. And even with Mane, you know, Mane, they spent a lot of money, but it was not the big, you know, it wasn't the Martial level of money that United spent around the same time.
And they weren't actually, looking back, you know, when the signs were made, they weren't done deals in that these lads were going to be, people still had question marks about Sadio Mane and Mo Salah, didn't they? Whereas
absolutely.
Manchester United go and spend £90 million on Paul Pogba, you know what you're getting.
Yeah, no, and that's the difference.
Which is mad
Liverpool,
back.
Though, to be fair, they realised that they needed those two players that they did spend huge, huge money on. And you know, obviously it's been justified. And I don't think rival fans like to sort of take the mickey and say, you know, Liverpool, you know, just buying the title and all that. But I think that even rival fans recognised that was the money that needed to be spent, and their club would have spent it if they could. Like, for instance, if City had Van Dijk, you'd think they'd never lose again.
No, yeah, no, absolutely.
It's just,
because I think he's better than Laporte and better than Stones, and I think those two are bloody good centre-halves as well. And, you know,
the
way, and actually, you know what, that's what I love about Guardiola, the way that he's got them two playing together, because he's still got company to fall back on if he needs to, but he's given them the time towards the back end of the last season to develop that partnership and grow it. What about Liverpool's injuries then? I think Trent Alexander-Arnold's probably going to be missing at Manchester United. We've got Joe Gomez, who's going to be out with a fractured lower leg, isn't it? Mm. We've got Joel Matip, 6 weeks with a broken collarbone, and Nathaniel Clyne hasn't been training.
Yeah.
For this game against United, Dave, are we expecting to see Fabinho at right-back, Milner at right-back, three at the back? What are we expecting to see?
Oh, that's a good question. I think you're right. I don't think Alexander-Arnold plays, even though Liverpool are trying to be cagey about it. And he did play James Milner at right back at Bournemouth, and you think, okay, well, you could definitely do that, but Milner got cramp and he's played. I think he's played 4 games on the bounce now, so it's like eventually you're going to have to give him a break. But so he's got a decision to make: does he play Fabinho at right back and possibly give Milner a rest, or Milner at right back and bring Fabinho back into the midfield? It's a tough one because, you know, you said right at the start about Liverpool having this spine, you left out the midfield.
Yeah.
And the one area where you'd say you've not got this kind of world-class element in the spine is in the midfield.
Yes.
Exactly.
I think it's coming. Well, and I think he's here.
Well, that's the point I'm trying to make is that, I mean, I think Fabinho has the ability in that holding midfield role to become the top class player that Liverpool fans say Liverpool don't have in midfield. And for me, it's his ability on the ball, under the press, under pressure, but also, and his ability to pass the ball forward. We've only seen it. We've only seen it so far against the slightly lesser sides when he has a tiny bit more time. Because English football is so much quicker, and at the very top level, you know, in Europe, it is so much quicker. But we've seen it. We've seen it against the slightly lesser side. We saw it against Red Star Belgrade, and I think we saw it against Bournemouth. I think, and so it's coming. And for me, you need to develop that and see whether he can take that step, which he still needs to take. Don't get me wrong. He's not there yet in English football, but I think you need to give him a chance. One other thing as well, the one thing I noticed when he came on against Napoli, he made that. It was his header that actually gave the ball to whatever, and another one I can't pronounce, their striker who had the chance that Alisson saved. It was actually his header. But how many headers did he win when he came on?
There was loads, tons.
And Klopp is desperate to get that guy in midfield who can win those headers when Liverpool are being bombarded because sides want to hit that ball against Liverpool. He wants he's holding midfielder to have height and strength and win the ball. And Fabinho absolutely did that. I counted 6-8 headers in front of the defence. And that's what he wants. He wants that. His system, I promise you, he wants a midfielder who can actually win that ball. So that's going to be vital. Against Manchester United, absolutely crucial because you know what they're doing.
Yeah, absolutely. All day.
Yeah, so he needs Fabinho to play central midfield or, you know, holding midfield.
You talked yourself into Milner at right back there.
Well, I exactly. That's my whole thought process. I'm worried about Milner playing another game, but I think he might have to play. He only had cramp, so he should be all right.
It's that pace from that left-hand side. Is it Rashford? We saw what he did to Trent Alexander-Arnold last season, unfortunately.
But no. Milner does have the experience to deal a little better with
and that. That's it. And just on Fabinho, because I completely agree, is everybody can see for me his qualities in the tackle. Mm. And how big a guy is and those things. But what you said to start talking about that is the thing that I've liked much more about Fabinho's game than anything. It is speed of movement and speed of thought and speed of pass.
Yeah.
He doesn't dwell on the ball ever. He takes one touch or two touch and then he pops it off. And it's not like, you know, when there's players who play the ball quite slowly to a teammate 5 yards away, he'll drill it at a player because he understands that extra second and a half and he trusts the guy to turn and move the ball forward. But his vertical passing, that's what he's looking for. How many times we've already seen him dink a ball over the top to somebody or down the right wing? It's that from the defensive midfield position that I think we don't unfortunately get with Jordan Henderson. I like Jordan Henderson. I think he's a really good footballer, actually.
Yeah, me too. I'm a massive fan.
But I do feel Fabinho's got a bit more to his game in that regard, both ends. And I wouldn't mind seeing Jordan evolve his position to somewhere else on the field. Yeah. Because of Firmino, and I said at the start of the season when we brought him and Keita in, Keita I'm massively impressed with over his time at Leipzig. I think every Liverpool fan turned into a scout watching the Bundesliga last season. But I thought the one player who would change our midfield fundamentally would be Fabinho from watching him for Monaco and what he'd do. So I completely agree. I think it's that one touch, two touch.
You know, interesting. I just thought coming to my mind. Fabinho absolutely does. And it is his ability to pass the ball forward under pressure and still find a man. And you know, that is rare in midfield, is at the very top level. But actually, the person who did that you know, you're saying about pinging the pass, Joel Matip was doing that against Napoli. And the midfield was going, Jesus Christ, come on. Because he was smashing balls.
Six times I counted during the game where Joel hit, basically, you know, Trent Alexander-Arnold passed their midfield or Roberto Firmino's feet. Think back to that first goal against Bournemouth. It's Joel Matip who plays the ball into Firmino's feet.
I mean, Matip actually showed he can step in and do that. But Firmino is going to be huge going forward. All this, I mean, you know, this stuff. I got some stick on Twitter because the Sunday Mirror did a story saying he was going to be sold to PSG to fund some other midfielder. And it was in the Sunday Mirror, which is not the Daily Mirror. It's nothing to do with the Daily Mirror. So, like, nothing to do with me whatsoever. But I mean, what I couldn't reply was because, you know, like rival paper, same stable paper is, it was just nonsense. You know, it's nonsense. There's no way they're going to let him go in Christmas when he's not even yet settled into the side. You want to see whether he can do it or not. And I think he can do it. And I think, you know, United game's a good chance to have a look and see whether he can. And if for nothing else, his height could be really important against them. So he comes in. He is Brazil's right back, you know.
I mean,
he is their first choice right back. So for Brazil, you know.
It's mad, isn't it?
He's not really going to struggle at right back, is he? If he wants to play him there. But I think just on balance, that height, Fellaini will play, won't he?
Yeah, I think he's guaranteed to play in this game.
That height is probably the key factor.
Okay, last question. Will this injury crisis spark us into a move in January for a defensive player?
Yeah, I've seen loads of that. We're definitely going on Twitter that we're definitely going for a centre half. And like, I don't think Liverpool are going for a centre half. They've got four top class centre halves, top class, and Gomez will be back before January, or, you know, certainly first week in January he'll probably be back. Even Matip will be back by the end of January. And I also when he let Clavan go, it was for a reason. And the reason was they rate
Masterson or Phillips?
Nat Phillips. They rate him really highly. Masterson's a decent player as well, by the way, but they rate Phillips as being potentially somebody.
He looked so good. I know it's pre-season, but he looked.
And pre-season's never an indicator, but they need to give space to the fifth centre-half, who's the kid, right? But if you buy a centre-half in January and he's your fifth centre-half, which he will be, you can't then sell him in the summer. So he stays, which means next season you've got five centre-halves and the young player is the sixth. So he never gets a game. He doesn't even get a game in the League Cup then, or doesn't even get on the bench in the League Cup. So for the sake of possibly a week when you don't have a third centre-half, because remember, they've got two fit centre-halves. So for possibly 1 week, and actually Fabinho can play there as well, by the way, mm-hmm. So, you know, it's not a crisis. So for 1 week when you may be not having a third centre-half, then is it worth it? No chance.
Is it skewed by Gomez also being your second-choice right-back?
Well, I mean, he's not necessarily.
Or is he your first-choice right-back?
Well, no, Alexander-Arnold's your first choice, right?
Okay.
100%, because Alexander-Arnold brings exactly what we were speaking about earlier, that ability to create chances, to bring the ball, to play as more than a right-back. So, no. But Gomez is a great choice in certain situations, which Klopp has used. But, to be fair, Klein has been forgotten, and Klein is still an England right back who has just struggled with injuries and has just had no fluency. So it's hard to put him in. But if he were to, I mean, and again, it's unfortunate. He's, you know, he's injured, been injured.
That's
at
the
time.
That's the issue, isn't it?
Yeah, no. But you know, if he does get, if I mean, it, when he gets fit, not if, because obviously it's only minor his problem at the moment. He's still an option, you know. He still is an option, and probably would have come in and played a few more games had he not. You know, he was fit for nearly all this season, but it's just unfortunate at the times when maybe he was going to come in. He's not quite there, you know. He's not quite match fit. He's probably fit, but he's not match fit because he's not trained. So, I don't think so. I mean, going forward, you know, if Gomez, which he will be, is your first choice centre half, then you do need a backup right back. But they've got a couple of really good young players.
And Camacho's obviously,
yeah,
highly rated as well, as he scored against Napoli under-19s in the night as well.
And obviously they've got the kid at left back as well, who's fantastic too, who they really rate as well. So Klopp likes to do that. He likes to give space to players, and I think Liverpool have got enough. Along with Manchester City, they've definitely got the best defensive sort of squad in the whole of the Premier League, by some distance.
As a Liverpool fan, my concern is that Dexy Lovren just misses a lot of games of football.
Yeah, but he didn't miss that many last season.
Injury, sickness. You know, it seems to be every 3 weeks. When he's in a run of form, he'll miss a game through sickness or something. And that's my issue. It's not that the four players, Van Dijk, Gomez, Matip and Lovren, aren't good enough. Because I actually think we've probably got up there for best third and fourth centre-halves in the league.
Along with City, exactly.
Mm-hmm. But it's the fact that Matip and Lovren, over the last 2 years, just miss a lot of football.
Well,
and Gomez has had his injuries, unfortunately.
I think that's a little bit unfair. Because Lovren, I mean, I take your point. It's certainly in his first couple of seasons, he did miss an awful lot of games. He didn't miss that many games last season. And I think, you know what I think? It's more, we're all aware, there's a fairly vocal and quite large element of the Liverpool support that just is not having Lovren. Having him.
Lovren's, it doesn't matter that he's played brilliantly
for over
a year.
Probably in the top 10 centre-halves in the world, probably.
Whisper it, David.
Yeah, he probably is. I'm not going any higher. Lovren reckons he's in the top one, but he's in the top 10. For me, he is centre-halves, top 10 in the world. He played in a World Cup final alongside a guy who's hopeless. So, you know, so what does that say about him? That says he is absolutely a top class player. Honestly, look at Croatia's team. You would not get away with that team getting to the World Cup final unless one of those centre-halves was top class. And it ain't, and again, I can't pronounce his name, but the guy with the ponytail, it ain't him. He's no good. He's no good. So it must have been Lovren. So he is in the top 10 in the world now, my evidence that proves it is he's still at Liverpool.
Yeah,
because Klopp, everybody loved Sacco, thought he was brilliant. Klopp, no chance, get out. He didn't rate him, and quite rightly, because he can't play. And I hesitate because I'm going to mention the Napoli centre half again. I still can't pronounce
Koulibaly.
Koulibaly. For me, can't play. Klopp would never sign him. And Lovren can play enough. And he's there because Klopp believes he's in the top 10 in the world.
Okay, and final question then. What is the score going to be as Liverpool prepare to face Manchester United at the weekend?
My fear is it's nil-nil. My absolute fear, because I hate Mourinho and I'd hate him to do this, because it would just be anti-football and it would be like, it justifies what his horrible methods. My real, real scary fear is they win 1-0. My prediction, right, because this is a different Liverpool to the Liverpool of last season. My prediction is Liverpool win, but they're not going to batter them because United are just going to sit and sit and sit. So let's go for 1-0 Liverpool.
Okay. I say Liverpool win 2-0. what happens is we for the first time ever score a bloody early goal against the Mourinho side, and it changes the way that they have to play. So then they don't do anything. They won't do anything until the 70th minute, yeah. Maybe 80th. Then they'll come out and then we'll score a goal for our second.
Yeah, well, I mean, you know, I like your confidence, and anything that beats that type of football that makes his life worse for me, absolutely, I'm 100%. But I still think he's gonna play that football where basically no football, because the ball won't be on the ground.
No.
Remember Mourinho, you know, this is what I want to say. That for me, that day, that night when he came, that afternoon, let's get it right eventually, when he came, when, you know, in the season when Liverpool almost won the title.
It's too soon.
I timed it, right? I actually timed it. The first 20 minutes of that game, the ball was in play for 6 minutes.
What?
I timed it. The ball was in play for 6 minutes out of 20. So that means for 14 of the first 20 minutes, Chelsea were putting the ball in the stands, were time wasting. The goalkeeper got like warned by the referee for time wasting in the sixth minute of a game. The ball was off the pitch constantly. And yet they came with a team that was worth 400 million, with like maybe three or four of the best players in the world. And it's like, that is Mourinho. They had a side that was amongst the best in the world, and he didn't even want to have the ball on the pitch.
I remember, and what I thought at the time was why it was a bit of a masterstroke by Mourinho, and I don't agree with it, but having gone through the City game where every time they touched the ball in that 13-14 season, we booed and hissed, he took the crowd out of the game by doing that. Because they never had the ball, that Chelsea team. You can't boo someone who doesn't have the ball. You can't boo your own team.
Yeah.
And he actually took a little bit of the sting out of the atmosphere that day with that time wasted stuff.
But honestly, you're the best coach in the world. You're managing one of the best teams in the world that has had hundreds of millions of pounds spent on it, and you go, I've got a genius idea, we're going to put the ball in the stand and keep it there.
I know, but it did actually work.
Whether it worked or not, it doesn't matter. It's not football, it's not. I haven't got any words, but you can't do that. Whether it works or not.
But he can, because he's a prick, and that's what he's always done.
And for me, that day, that was it. Right, okay. It's worse than Tony Pulis. It's worse than Sam Allardyce. It is worse than anybody who gets all the stick that football gives. That day, that was like the end of it. It's like you, to be honest, if you're Chelsea's owner, and you're going, I've given you all this money, and your genius tactic is to get the ball and take it to the sideline and hold it. And he was holding it himself. Just hold the ball on the side. And it's like, oh, my God, jeez. Somebody should have, like, said, sorry, but you can never, ever be a football manager again.
That would have been lovely. And on that bombshell, we'll have to end the show, because that would have been really nice.
It should be a rule. Yeah. If you do that, you can never manage again.
No more. The FA haven't got any balls either, so they would never do that. David, thank you so much for joining me once again. It's been an absolute pleasure. Thank you very much for watching. I hope you're enjoying Freeview Week, where we put all of the subscriber content onto YouTube. Don't forget to follow @MaddockMirror on Twitter for the latest around Liverpool. And what else are you covering nowadays?
I did a bit of boxing and I was out
still
there.
Still doing a bit of boxing?
But no, I mean, it's just Merseyside. And, well, actually, I am the Northern Football Correspondent, so, you know. Northern football.
You've made it sound interesting. And some rants about Mourinho, no doubt, on Twitter.
Yeah.
Thanks very much.
When you make decisions for your company, you look for the no-brainers. And if you have a lot of mailing to do, Stamps.com is the ultimate no-brainer. It streamlines your processes to make your business more efficient, which makes you less busy. Mail checks, invoices, legal documents, and everything you need to keep your business running with Stamps.com. Seamlessly connect with every major marketplace and shopping cart. Schedule package pickups and see your cheapest and fastest shipping options from different carriers, with rates up to 89% off USPS and UPS rates. And with the Stamps.com mobile app, you can take care of mailing and shipping wherever you are. Make the same no-brainer decision as over 1 million other businesses with Stamps.com. Sign up with code PROGRAM for a 4-week trial, plus free postage and a free digital scale. No long-term commitments or contracts. That's Stamps.com. Code PROGRAM.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
I'm Ina Garten. Welcome to Be My Guest, the podcast. One of the best gifts you can give friends is spending time together. But what's even better than that? Cooking with them. On Be My Guest, the podcast, new friends and old stop by my barn for some conversation and great cooking. We talk about food, life, and everything in between. Listen to Be My Guest, the podcast with me, Ina Garten, and join us wherever you get your podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.
Watching. Don't forget to like the video, subscribe to the Red Men TV on YouTube, and we'll see you next time. Ta-ra.